Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. It is Memorial Day. I hope you enjoyed the beautiful weather the last few days, and here we are again with you know what. Today, thunderstorms and showers, a high near around 80 or high 70s. Tonight, chance of thunderstorms, about 50%. Tuesday, showers and thunderstorms again, likely 80 to 90% chance. And in the evening, still pretty high chance of showers and thunderstorms, again, all the way up to 80%. Wednesday, rain and thunderstorm mostly in the afternoon, chance of showers and thunderstorms at night. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Okay, when everything's said and done, it sounds like it's going to be between 2.5 to 4 inches of rain coming down this week. And then on Sunday, the sun is predicted, that is to say, part sun. Thank you for joining me on this Memorial Day. Really appreciate you stopping in. The Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau will be here to give a preview of activities for the coming month. We'll have a recording of presidential candidate John Delaney, recently in Ames. And reporter Pat Schlarbaum provides a beautiful Memorial Day story about using land to memorialize the people that we love. So stay tuned. It's going to be a beautiful show, and I think that you'll be glad you stuck around. All right, so let's get things started. Here is Mr. Dennis Hart from a rundown of last week's news from the state of Iowa. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here with you on this Memorial Day. Weather made big news around the state last week, as it so often has these past few months. One woman died and a man was injured in a tornado just south of Adair on Wednesday. The National Weather Service said the twister was EF2 strength. That category of storm has peak winds of at least 111 miles an hour. The fatal victim was identified as 74-year-old Linda Brownlee. The injured man was 78-year-old Harold Brownlee. Then, on Friday night, another tornado touched down, this one 11 miles southwest of the Iowa City Airport. That one reached a wind speed of 110 miles an hour. No one was injured, but some buildings and trailers were damaged or destroyed. The graduation ceremony for Iowa City West High School was delayed until the storm threat passed. Meanwhile, there was word last week that the federal government will send another round of aid, $16 billion worth, to help farmers affected by President Trump's ongoing trade war with China. That's an important announcement for Iowa, which is estimated to lose $2 billion annually from ongoing trade disputes not just with China, but with Mexico, Canada, and other countries. Iowa is the nation's biggest pork, corn, and egg producer, and the second biggest soybean grower. The direct payments to farmers will be provided county by county, based on acres of production. Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, who has a farm in Butler County, said he will be among those who sign up to receive some of that bailout money from the government. Also last week, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds vetoed legislation that would have expanded the state's medical marijuana program. She called for caution, saying the health and safety of Iowans was too important not to get things right. If the governor had signed the bill, legal marijuana in Iowa could have contained more THC, the chemical that makes recreational marijuana users high. The governor also vetoed legislation that would have restricted the ability of the state attorney general's office to join out-of-state lawsuits. That bill, passed by the Republican-controlled state legislature last month, was a rebuke of Democratic Attorney General Tom Miller's decision to join lawsuits targeting President Trump. Still on the political beat, Democratic presidential hopeful Beto O'Rourke held a televised town hall meeting at Drake University in Des Moines. Among other things, he called for the impeachment of President Trump, said he does not like the idea of Medicare for all, but would instead let people keep their private health insurance, and said he would not be willing to forgive all student debt. He also said if he doesn't become the Democratic presidential nominee, he would support whoever does. Another Democratic presidential hopeful showed up in Ames. Maryland Congressman John Delaney told a crowd that he's a strong supporter of women's reproductive freedom, that he wants to expand access to health care, and that he has a plan to combat climate change. Also last week, Democrat Eddie Maurer jumped into the race to unseat incumbent Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst next year. Maurer is a businessman who lost a primary challenge last year to Cindy Axne for Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. Earlier, another Democrat, Indianola lawyer Kimberly Graham, announced she was also going to challenge Ernst. Maurer said his Senate bid will focus on what he's heard from Iowans, concerns about health care, the environment, and agricultural policy. On the medical front, Des Moines Mercy One Medical Center announced last week that it is suspending its kidney and pancreas transplant program for at least a year. That program had been performing about 30 transplants a year. The voluntary suspension will start July 1st. Also last week, after more than 2 years of delays, Chris Soule's lawyers successfully argued to again postpone the Reality Star's sentencing on charges related to a fatal road crash in 2017. In a rural Buchanan County courtroom, an emotional hearing about whether the family of the victim would be allowed to speak at the sentencing was overshadowed by the revelation of a wrongful death settlement in the case. A $2.5 million settlement for the family of the crash victim, 66-year-old Kenny Mosher, was approved last January. It headed off any civil litigation about the culpability of Soles, his parents, or their insurance company. Mosher died from injuries after Soles' truck rear-ended his tractor. Last week, the judge ordered a new pre-sentence investigation report, which delayed Soles' sentencing. Soles pleaded guilty last year to leaving the scene of a personal injury accident. Meanwhile, in Marshalltown, a 71-year-old woman received a traffic citation for failing to yield to a pedestrian within an intersection after her vehicle struck and killed an 8-year-old boy. Marilyn Diggins struck Timothy Maxson with her pickup truck on May 15th. In Cedar Rapids, students at Washington High School held a walkout against violence 2 days after two teenagers were killed and another two were injured in a weekend shooting on the other side of the city. The high school's senior class president, 17-year-old Darshawn Smith, estimated that 7 of his peers had been killed by bullets during the time he's been a student. There was also word last week that a man died after a fall from a TV tower near Alamon in Polk County. Officials said some men were making repairs on the tower last Wednesday when one of them fell. In Ottumwa, a man was found dead inside his home this past weekend, and a suspect has been arrested. Police found 41-year-old Clarence Carlton Foster's body, and 37-year-old Preston Odell Martin was taken into custody. Elsewhere, a Des Moines area man was sentenced to 50 years in prison for beating another man to death inside an Urbandale bar. 49-year-old Rodney Hendrickson had been convicted of second-degree murder. He had used a stand-your-ground defense and said his actions were legal under Iowa law. Polk County jurors did not agree. In Maquoketa, there was word that a dentist would not be charged in the death of a man who was suspected of trying to steal things from the dentist's office. Clyde Overturf told authorities he was spending the night in his office last March when he tackled and fought with a man he found in the office's garage. The suspect died from sudden cardiac arrest. There was a strange story out of Decatur County last week where authorities said a man used his tractor with a bale spear attached to the front to impale the county sheriff's car and push it more than 100 feet into a field. Officials said 54-year-old Jerry Greenland of Grand River took aim at Sheriff Ben Boswell when Boswell and two deputies responded to a call. No one was injured. Greenland faces one count of attempted murder. There was word last week that the Des Moines Spanish Seventh-day Adventist Church was accepting donations on behalf of the family of a Chicago woman with Iowa family ties who was killed and whose baby was stolen. The baby was later found. The fatal victim was identified as 19-year-old Marlon Ochoa Lopez. Her father lives in Iowa. Also last week, Polk County supervisors agreed to pay a settlement of $65,000 to a former employee in the recorder's office who claimed she suffered from debilitating migraines, but whom the county fired, alleging she had abused time off for sick days. The county had fired Breanne Moberg when she was more than 7 months pregnant. She had sued the county, saying it had retaliated against her. Meanwhile, the Iowa Occupational Safety and Health Administration proposed fining the Glenwood Resource Center nearly $60,000 for 16 serious worker safety violations. Glenwood is the state institution for intellectually disabled Iowans. The state said the facility failed to protect its staff from being seriously injured by aggressive residents. In Indianola last week, officials were reconsidering the changes proposed for the city's downtown business district after numerous residents voiced concerns about the proposed changes. City officials said they want any changes to coincide with construction of the new Warren County Courthouse. Some residents are concerned about converting one-way streets around the town square to two-way streets. They are also worried about the possible loss of parking spaces. In Des Moines, the U.S. General Services Administration released drawings for a U.S. courthouse planned along the downtown riverfront. It was the first public glimpse of the $137 million building the federal government wants to build on the former riverfront YMCA site. The release of the drawings came days after several Des Moines leaders held a news conference to reaffirm their opposition to the courthouse site. Meanwhile, Des Moines landed on the list of cities with the best park systems in the United States. Iowa's capital city ranked 39th on the Trust for Public Lands Park Score Index, which rates the 100 most populous cities based on total park acreage, investment, amenities, and access. Des Moines beat out such cities as Atlanta, Dallas, Miami, and Austin, Texas. About 70% of Des Moines residents live within a 10-minute walk of a park. Ankeny also made news last week when the U.S. Census Bureau reported it's the 10th fastest-growing city in the United States. The city's population grew 4.6% last year to a bit more than 65,000 residents. Ankeny was the only city in the Midwest that made the top 15 list of fastest-growing cities. There was sad news from the Blank Park Zoo in Des Moines last week. Word that Zuri the giraffe had to be euthanized because of several age-related chronic health conditions. Zuri was 21 years old. Four other giraffes are at the zoo. And one more note from last week before I go, a story about print advertisements that have appeared in the Des Moines Register and in other newspapers all around the world. The ads carry a headline that reads, "Looking for a good woman to marry," and the ad has strings of red hearts in it. It claims to be from a 57-year-old who seeks a nice lady between 40 and 79 with intent to marry. But here's the deal. FBI agents say those ads are part of global scams that have defrauded unsuspecting respondents of millions of dollars. Because once someone responds to the ad, that person is likely to receive requests to use their own bank accounts for international wire transfers. And that is your summary of the past week's news from around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart. Thank you for tuning in on this Memorial Day. I'll be right back here on Friday with news from around Ames. In the meantime, I hope you have a fine holiday and a safe, healthy, and happy rest of the week.
Mr. Hart, for last week's stories of Iowa in the news. And this is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Thank you for listening in on this Memorial Day. Last Thursday, Democratic candidate John Delaney was in Ames. He came to Cafe Diem. KHOI reporter Susan Franson was there to record some of what happened. Susan, you tell me that it was a packed house.
Yes. I think a lot of people were curious to meet him because he started campaigning very early. He's already visited all 99 counties. There were a lot of people there, and he gave a stump speech. I was very fortunate. I was the only press person there, so I got a prime location. I'm going to play a couple minutes of that because there were some new ideas in it. And there were many questions, but I just picked out two, one on healthcare and climate change, because he had unusual ideas.
We're going to hear a few excerpts from his stump speech and then two questions that were raised by the audience at Cafe Diem last Thursday here in Ames.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Susan.
My name is John Delaney. I am running for president, but I actually have a plan for our future. And importantly, I have a plan as to how to make it happen, because that's really what we need. We need action. I've spent my whole life bringing people together, which I actually think is one of the most important issues facing this country right now, how terribly divided we are. When I'm inaugurated, I want to look out at the American people and say, I represent every one of you, whether you voted for me or not. And to prove it, in my first 100 days, which I think sets the whole tone of a presidency, I'm going to put my shoulder behind five big ideas in climate, in infrastructure, in healthcare, in immigration, in technology policy. But every one of them will be based on an existing bipartisan bill in the Congress. I won't even change a comma in it, because I want to look out at the American people and say, your elected officials, Democrats and Republicans, have found common ground. Well, you know what that means? We agree with each other on this. So why don't we do these things? Why don't we start making some progress? I think that would change everything. I'm calling for national service. Not mandatory, but a program that is so exciting every young person will want to do it. So they graduate from high school and they sign up to serve the country. They could do the military, they could do community service, they could be part of something I'm calling the Climate Corps, which is young people going around the country and, you know, helping communities build sustainable infrastructure, or they can just do general infrastructure projects on our parks and stuff like that. Think about that. Imagine a kid from Ames rooming with a kid from Boston and going to New Orleans to be part of the Climate Corps. How great would that be for them? They'd be instilled with this notion of service, which they would carry with them forever. They'd realize that we have a lot more in common with each other than the media would lead us to believe. They'd get the skills. They'd have that kind of gap year that so many of them need. We'd give them breaks on their student loans. Some of them would actually get certificates. They might be welders when their year is done, and they could go get a job with that.
How do you feel about our governor and the privatization that we have?
Well, I think privatization was a disaster.
Yeah.
Right. I spent most of my career in the healthcare business. I understand the healthcare business. One of the big problems we have in this country is Medicaid, right? It's actually a really broken system. And one of the reasons it's so broken is because it doesn't pay enough. And when you don't pay enough, you don't have provider networks and people can't access care. So listen, I'm not a big fan of your governor, and I was a big supporter of Fred Hubble.
Yeah.
Right, so that's an easy one. But look, at the Medicaid issue, we have to create a form of universal health care in this country. Every American should have health care as a right. I think it's a basic human right. I also think it's smart economic policy. Because I, as I said, I wouldn't have started my business if my wife didn't have health care. How bad would that have been? I wouldn't have created 2,000 jobs and changed a lot of people's lives. So I think we need universal health care. But my proposal is modeled after the German model. The German model is everyone gets a basic government health care as a right, but then they have options to buy supplementals or to opt out and get private insurance. That will lead to the healthiest health care marketplace. Right? I think it's a mistake to run on a single-payer health care system. I think it's a big mistake. I think it's bad policy, and I think it's bad politics. And just to be clear, I don't think it's bad because I don't want everyone to have health care. I want everyone to have health care as a right. But the problem with a single-payer health care system is right now, Medicaid, which you just talked about, only pays 80% of health care costs. So if we all owned a hospital and only took Medicaid, we'd close right away. Medicare pays 95% of health care costs. If we all owned a hospital and just took Medicare, it would also close. Private insurance pays about 115 to 120% of costs. So there's no evidence that if the government paid all the bills, that it would ever pay enough. And that would lead to a reduction in quality and access in healthcare. And all you gotta do is ask any hospital in this state or anywhere. And I do all the time. I go to rural hospitals, I go to hospitals everywhere. And I always ask them the same question. What would have happened last year if all of your commercial insurance bills were paid at the Medicare rate, which is what would happen under Medicare for All? And everyone says the same, well, we would close. So it's bad fundamental policy, and we don't need to have a single payer to create universal health care. Lots of countries have universal health care, and they don't have a single payer system, like Germany, which I think has the best system. But the other reason it's bad politics. So again, my dad was a construction worker in a union. One of the things he thought that that union did for him the best was negotiate health care. And most members of unions have really good health care plans, and they like them. So why are we going to run on this notion that we're going to make your health care illegal? I mean, that's a crazy idea. A lot of workers think the health care system is screwy in this country, because it is, but they kind of like their health care. So I don't know. I just think it's a disaster for us to suddenly tell all these people. There's 180 million people in this country who will be told their health care is illegal under a Medicare for All or single-payer system. Do we think we're going to win any elections on that? So thank you for the question.
I'm especially concerned about the climate. I mean, I have grandchildren, and I'm a little bit concerned about whether they'll have a better standard of living than their parents. But I'm really, really concerned about whether they're going to have a livable world. And I really like the issues that you have of supporting the carbon tax and the Green New Deal. And this is the first time I've heard of this Climate Corps. Right now, the country is divided on that. And I wonder what you see as the biggest hurdle to effecting these changes and making these programs that we need to do, like, right now?
Great question, Deb. I'm so glad you asked the question the way you did, because the question about climate change is both what are you going to do and how are you going to do it? Because unlike other issues, we are running out of time on this issue. So the goal for climate is net zero by 2050. We have to hit that goal here and around the world because it's a global issue. So I believe I have the best climate plan, not only in terms of it being the most responsive to the problem, but it's one I can get done. And let me go through it with you. It's kind of a $4 trillion plan in the aggregate. So the first thing I'm going to do is get passed, and I'll do this my first year as president, and I'll tell you why I'll be able to do it. It's called a carbon fee and dividend structure. So you put a price or a fee or a tax on carbon, and you take all the money that it raises, which is between $2 or $3 trillion over 10 years, and you put all that money in a lockbox, and you give it right back to the American people in a dividend. So it goes out one pocket and then back in another. But meanwhile, it changes behavior dramatically. Columbia University modeled that this bill will cut emissions by 90%. And you know why I'm so confident I'll get this done? Because I introduced this bill in the Congress, and it had bipartisan support. It is the only big thing on climate that has had bipartisan support. And I'll tell you exactly how I plan on getting it done. I'm going to get every single Democrat in the Congress to vote for it, which you know they will. And then I'm going to get the Republicans who live in coastal states. So I may not get Grassley and Ernst to vote for it because they're kind of climate deniers. And we can't wait to get the climate deniers. But if you go to Florida, more than 50% of Republicans in Florida believe climate change is a problem and that the government needs to do something about it. So Marco Rubio and Rick Scott will vote for this because they have to, as will the Republicans in North Carolina, Georgia, South Carolina, Louisiana. And so the reason I say this is I'm very much wired to get things done. And I have a strategy to do everything I'm talking about. And it all involves building the right coalitions. So that's the first thing I'm going to do in my first year. And again, all you got to do is look in the congressional record and see that I introduced this and I had Republicans on the bill. And it was endorsed by all the main environmental groups. So this is a winner for us, and it'll make a huge dent on climate. But it's not going to solve the whole problem. We got to do more. So let me tell you what else we're going to do. I'm going to increase the Department of Energy research budget fivefold. We need a moonshot on basic research in storage and transmission technologies, or we won't get to net zero. I'm going to create a whole new industry in this country, and I'm going to locate it in the heartland and rural America. And it is called the direct air capture industry. Direct air capture are machines that exist right now, and they suck carbon out of the atmosphere. They're like vacuums. The National Academy of Science just released a huge report on their viability. The problem with these machines, if we had one here, is that they're really expensive and they're small. But you know, that's what I would have said about wind and solar 30 years ago. I would have said, it works, but it's really expensive. And what did we do? We created a market for it through tax credits. And what do you see around Iowa everywhere? Wind turbines and solar, and they're cheaper than fossil fuels because we have innovated, which is what we do best as a country, innovated these machines to be effective and scalable.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you so much for being with us on this Memorial Day, a day of remembrance. KHOI naturalist reporter Pat Schlarbaum brings you this story of remembrance and honoring.
There's a new prairie area to walk in Story County. Thanks to the Carroll family, 49 acres of West Indian Creek have been dedicated to our prairie streamside heritage a few miles northwest of Nevada. On Earth Day, April 22nd, there was a dedication with a wonderful memorial to Lorna Carroll's father. There was a slight rain with wind that Earth Day, which impeded the recording, so Lorna was kind enough to come by the KHOI studio to record her thoughts from that day.
Tell us about the Carroll Prairie.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me here. I actually wrote a speech that I read at the dedication. Should I begin?
Yes, please.
We came together on Earth Day, April 22nd, to celebrate a new place in Story County for people to appreciate the natural world. Carroll Prairie is named after my dad, Tom Carroll, who most of you never had the great pleasure of meeting. His nickname was the Gray Ghost, which coincidentally is the nickname of the Northern Harrier Hawk, which is an endangered Iowa raptor that likes grasslands and low-lying marshes. My dad died in January of 2013, and I wanted to find a way for my family to honor him. My dad was an Irish immigrant who came with my mom to Chicago in 1959. And like most immigrants, they came here with very little. And through faith in God and hard work, they built a life here. Dad joined the Local 150 and worked in construction till he retired at the age of 70. Together, they raised a family and were now scattered across the country, living and working and raising our own families. My dad was the classic Irish character. He loved to drink and to smoke, curse and laugh and tell stories and sing funny songs. He was the life of the party, and he enjoyed a good crack more than anything. He could insult people with a twinkle in his eyes, and he got away with it because people couldn't stay mad at him. Dad did not seem particularly interested in the great outdoors while we were growing up, and picnics or nature walks were few and far between. But what he did show me, though, was a kindness towards any animals that he encountered, be it wild or domestic, and a strong sense of ethics in his dealings with people. He rooted for the underdog, and he had no time for people he couldn't trust, or people who were only interested in what he called the almighty dollar. He knew what was right and what was wrong. I strongly feel the same way. Protecting what little natural land is left is right, and in this time of climate change and contaminated water, continuing to do business as usual is wrong. This land always felt to me like an oasis, and whenever I spent time out here, it felt as though the land was breathing and that the ground was resting. I felt a spiritual connection to God and appreciation for the good things that He created here. And if I squinted, I could see what it was like around here when people coexisted with nature instead of dominated it, how beautiful and diverse it used to be. I recognized I was not able to improve the prairie that's here on my own. I also wanted to ensure that it would stay in its natural state and try to protect the butterflies, the insects, and the birds that I saw here. My good friend Cindy Hildebrand recommended contacting the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation for advice and direction. They're the ones who told me about Iowa's conservation tax credit. The same tax credit that for some reason has recently been under attack at the State House. The conservation tax credit is the only reason that I could afford to do this, and it was the only reason that this group was standing there today on April 22nd for the dedication. I'm so very grateful to INHF, who took on purchasing and protecting this land until Story County Conservation could fundraise. I'm so grateful to Story County Conservation for the work that they did in acquiring it. And I am also grateful to the other partners who helped in purchasing and fundraising. I want to encourage both Story County Conservation and INHF to keep up the good work. You are doing the right thing by trying to protect, to educate and give Story County residents a chance to enjoy what little natural land is left. And I want to encourage and challenge landowners in Story County to consider protecting some of their land as well, to do whatever they can to try to reverse the effects of climate change, to help improve water quality in our area, and work to return some of the land around here to its natural state. And hopefully, the gray ghost will soon find its way to this little prairie, find that habitat acceptable, and maybe even become a resident.
And it was about halfway through that an excellent birder here in Story County, a wolf ostrich, turned and said, "There's a northern harrier."
I know.
Yeah, it kind of took everybody's breath away.
Yeah.
And when you mentioned the northern harrier, I thought, oh, what an indicative bird.
Yep.
That they nest in the prairie.
Yes.
They're the only hawk that nests on the ground.
Yep.
So to have it fly by was just, oh. And I might share the address. This is at the intersection of Avenue 610 and 200th Street.
Correct.
So we're a couple miles east of the Milford Township School on E-29.
That's right.
Yep. And then a mile south. And it's right on Indian Creek, a major watershed of the water course that goes right through our county seat, Nevada. And in a sense, the inhabitants of Milford Township and Story County own West Indian Creek.
Yes.
Are you aware of any of water testing?
We bought the land in the early 2000s. But prior to us, monitoring the water when it enters the property and when it exits the property didn't show any change. And the theory was the water was going through too quickly. It had been straightened. And even in the time that I've owned it, it has oxbows and it has some curves in it. And it's starting to get some of those back naturally. So we're hoping with the restoration that it'll be kind of more zigzaggy the way it's supposed to be, which would allow more filtration and more settling of the water.
You seem to have interjected a sense of sacred responsibility.
I do feel a responsibility. I'm a Catholic. I'm a practicing Catholic. And Pope Francis wrote an encyclical called Laudato Si several years ago. And in it, he pointedly says, we have an obligation to care for God's creation. It's really important that we do. And, you know, the land came into my ownership kind of a gift. You know, people have taken an interest in it. It has these prairie remnants on it, but it was never formally protected. And this was something that came into my life, combination of kind of the perfect storm of me getting this, the conservation tax credits, the directive, you know, from Pope Francis that we really need to do what we can to protect what's left. So that kind of helped spur me in that direction as well. Creation isn't ours to do with what we please. It's just not. We have a responsibility to care for it as a principle of our faith. I would like to encourage people to explore the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation and consider becoming a member or supporting them in some way. I know that they have worked with farmers who are facing retirement and perhaps don't have family members wanting to take it over. They have precious land that has been in their family for generations, and they found peace in working with INHF to know that the land was going to be managed or not develop. INHF is really careful about making sure that people's wishes are met. So, you know, it's an honorable organization. It's something I feel proud to be a member of. Similar to the way the Nature Conservancy works on a national level, Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, they work with all the players. They try to come up with ways that it's mutually beneficial. Farmers can still continue to make a living. The land can be protected at the same time. The soil runoff can be reduced. They really try to work with everybody who has an interest in a particular piece of property. The great thing about the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation is they will oftentimes precious pieces of property may come up for sale for one reason or another, and the local conservation boards can't rally that quickly. They don't have such a store of funds to purchase it. So INHF will oftentimes step in, purchase it, and hang on to it until either Pheasants Forever or the local conservation or other hunting groups can do the fundraising that it takes. And that's exactly what happened with this piece of property.
As Lorna Carroll mentioned, the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation played a key role in transferring her prairie farm to public ownership. I wanted to learn more about the tax credit incentive program. The 2019 legislature placed public lands under attack with a Bill 542 to restrict the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation from assisting farmers when they wanted to add to public lands in Iowa. Here's Abby Hay Terpstra, Landowner Relations Director, and Joe Jajak, Communications Director with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation in Des Moines.
My name is Abby Hay Terpstra, and I'm the Donor Relations Director here at Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation.
And you met Lorna Carroll through the Carroll Prairie?
Yes. Lorna had already started making some inquiries about what to do to protect the prairie, and I had the opportunity to meet her for the first time. I think it was the winter before the donation went through, and we were able to sit down with her in her living room and hear a little bit more about what the land had meant to her and her family and why she wanted to seek protecting it. And then she took us out there, too, for a walk around there. It was a beautiful, clear winter day. Snow was on the ground. We walked out there through the snow down the path, and the land is beautiful. Lorna describes it kind of as a bowl. And when you walk down into that bowl, you just are surrounded by a sense of peace. It's a nice sized property, one that is very accessible. You can explore it in a day, no problem. But when you're there, you really feel like you are in a special place. It's large enough that it holds that sense of what a prairie could be. So a wonderful experience to be out on that land with her.
What exactly were you able to share with her in that initial meeting about how to approach a public ownership of Carroll Prairie?
There's a number of different options if people want to protect their land and make it available for the public. What Lorna chose to do was use a bargain sale, and that means that she sold the land to us for a reduced price and was able to receive a tax credit on the difference of the value between what she could have gotten for that land and what she did get for that land. Some people donate land outright. Other people, the land is an asset that they need to have some income off of.
Over the last legislative session, the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation was essentially singled out. And Joe, please give your name and then your role with that legislation.
I'm Joe Jajak. I'm the communications director here at INHF. And you're right, Pat. There was a lot going on during the legislative session this year. And a lot of it centered around public land. And over the last 40 years, INHF has been in the middle of the creation of a lot of public land in Iowa, both at the state and county and city level. And so I think the people that were singling us out, we're really zeroing in on what they see as a competition for land. So there were a few bills proposed. One was eventually passed that, in essence, is going to make it harder to create more public land in Iowa. And I will say that from where these bills started to the one where it ended and was passed were vastly improved to the credit of a lot of legislators and a lot of people that worked to improve these bills. For instance, the bill that did pass, it is in regard to one specific program, the State Revolving Fund, and it does not allow INHF or similar private conservation organizations to use these low-interest loans to hold land that will eventually go public. And we did away with that program, which is unfortunate because it was a good program for public land, especially for water quality, which is really what it was intended for. But I will say that that bill, when it was originally introduced, included doing away with the conservation tax credit. To their credit, the legislators that introduced and managed this bill heard from people that have benefited from this tax credit, both on private land protection and public land, and saw the impact it would have. And I think that they recognize the value in that. So it's an incentive for sure for people to protect land, but it helps public agencies create more parks and trails and wildlife areas around Iowa as well. It's a program that has multiple benefits. It makes it easier for families, for people to be able to donate land, to be able to do protection on their own land. But those savings from a bargain sale, for instance, like we had at Carroll Prairie, those are passed on to our public partners and save taxpayers money in the long run, too. So it's really a good program, and I think that legislators recognize that, and we're grateful they did.
Will that be the end of it?
I don't think that's going to be the end of it. I think we're going to see more bills of this nature introduced in the future, but I think the heartening thing is that when we saw a bill that was a direct attack on public land, it was really an egregious bill all around, a House File 542 that was introduced early in session that would have made it hard to expand parks and wildlife areas in any way around the state. We saw hundreds and hundreds of people come to the Capitol on a couple days' notice and tell their legislators what public land means to them. It became clear pretty quickly that public land holds a special place in people's hearts. Everyone makes special memories out on parks and wildlife areas, and we don't have much of that in Iowa. We're consistently ranked near the bottom of percentage of public land here, and so those few places we do have or are able to build on are really special, and it's important that we work to protect those and expand on those. But there are people that want to make it harder, and we're not going to see the end of that, but we know that there are a lot of people out there that are going to fight for public land and for conservation in Iowa, so that was great to see this year.
I really want to thank Lorna and the landowners like her who have a special place in nature that has been part of their family and see the value in opening that up to the public. I think there's a desire to have a place that feels like your own, and it takes a special person to see a place that is unique and will benefit from having the public welcome there. And that kind of vision is something that I am so honored to be exposed to at my job here at INHF. Private conservation is also very important in the state of Iowa, but making those available to everybody, that's really special.
And Lorna would want me to include, I hope every visit includes a Northern Harrier.
Yes.
Like at the dedication.
Yes. Day.
When we have a dedication of a special place like Lorna and landowners like her, that it's really the culmination of years of work on behalf of landowners, INHF staff, Story County Conservation, or whatever public agency is creating a place like this that's going to be open to the public. And so I want to thank them. But I also want to say how important it is to talk to your legislators. That's not a thing that's natural or comfortable for a lot of people, but there are a lot of ways that you can stand up and advocate for or fight for conservation, public land. Protecting these places is important to our growth and our future as a state. There's so many reasons, economic development and public health and water quality. And now, when legislators aren't busy, is the perfect time to talk to them about that, instead of when they are dealing with 20 other bills at the same time and you have to tell them this very important thing during session. The off season is a perfect time to talk to them. And I hope everyone just takes the opportunity to fight for these things. And so to find your own way to advocate for those things, I think, is really important. The animals, the plants, and future generations that aren't here to talk about what it means to them. We like to say that we are a voice for the voiceless.
This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation's Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at oasco.org.
But the hills of Iowa make me wish that I could. And I've never found a way to say I love you. But if the chance came by, oh, I would. But way back where I come from, we never mean to bother. We don't like to make our passions other people's. And we walk in the world of safe people. And at night we walk into our houses and burn. Just a little bit to dance out of the lights then stray from the light. But I feel that to fall in love with you is to fall from a great and gruesome height.
Thank you, Dar Williams, singing Iowa, and thank you, Pat Schlarbaum, for that report on the Carroll Prairie. Crystal Davis is here. She's joined us from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Crystal comes every month to tell us about what is coming up in public events. Crystal, thank you for coming back.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's with the rain comes a lot of green and the growing season. And so we invite you to come to the farmers markets. And Ames is so blessed. We have two farmers markets. They happen every Saturday. Both of them start at 8 a.m. in the morning. So we have one at North Grand Farmers Market in the north parking lot north of JCPenney. And then we have one on Ames Main Street down on the 300 and 400 blocks. There's great vegetables, produce, handmade goods, handwoven baskets, furniture, free entertainment, children's activities, and so forth. So be sure to check out both farmers markets every Saturday through October.
And you can buy plant seedlings too there. I bought rosemary seedlings for my herb garden.
Yeah. Also this weekend on Friday, May 31st and Saturday, June 1st, there is an art and an antique sale at the Sheman Building hosted by the University Museums. So if you've ever been interested in owning your own original museum quality piece of art, decorative arts, pressed glass, medals, medallions, art books, t-shirts, they're going to have a sale where everyone's welcome to come. This is in their inventory and they're just having an art sale to free up space and give back to the community. So there's things that might be maybe a t-shirt or an art book that came with an exhibit. Maybe they've ordered extra prints that went with a piece that they had. So they're going to have also the original campanile copper roof tiles. It's just a little bit of everything. Check that out at the Sheman Building from noon to 6 on Friday, May 31st, or 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, June 1st. Everyone is welcome. So get there early, I suggest.
I'm sure there will be people that come early and really look for the special things.
The special things, right.
I've learned that the hard way.
Also starting this Saturday, June 1st, ongoing through all of June and July, Yoga in the Park. And this is presented through Ames Park and Recreation at 10 a.m. every Saturday. They won't have a class after the 4th of July, so no class on July 6th. This is open to the public, so we invite you to come at Banshell Park, and they'll have an instructor who will walk you through yoga, bring your own mat, and it's for all levels of expertise. So what a great way to start your weekend with Yoga in the Park.
That's very nice. Yeah.
June 1st, also a big day, this first Saturday in June. It's the unveiling ceremony for the Ada Hayden signage. And so this is from their Ada Hayden Friends group, and they have 12 signs recently installed around the park, and they are interpretive signs to provide information on the park, such as wetlands, native prairie, and the function of Ada Hayden Lake as a backup water source frame. So this will be Saturday, June 1st at 12:30, if you'd like to go out and see those signs and their special ceremony to commemorate that occasion. June 1st keeps going. Summerfest is back, and so all the public is invited to go to Campus Town area, and it starts at 3 o'clock. This is a family-friendly event from 3 to 7 p.m., and they've got activities like face painting, balloons, their famous root beer garden, petting zoo, and more. They're also going to have a cutest dog contest. So
this is new?
Yeah, this is new. So
we'll have to interview that dog afterwards on KHOR.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? They've got categories for small, medium, and large, and a puppy, and then 7 to 9, some great live music and a beer garden. Then on Sunday, June 2nd, a ribbon cutting for the Roosevelt Park ping pong tables. That event is Sunday, June 2nd at 7 p.m. at Roosevelt Park. Brand new ping pong tables donated by an Ames resident. They're going to be a permanent structure there for anyone who wants to come to the park and play ping pong. Also, as we move into June, the Ames Municipal Band begins their 2019 season. This will be going on all through June and July on Thursdays. Bring your lawn chair and enjoy some great music in the park. Thursdays in June and July. Starts at 7 o'clock. So Thursday, June 6th, head on over to Durham Banshell Park. Pre-show is the Heart of Iowa Senior Band. Also, June brings back a favorite for downtown Ames, the Art Walk. So Friday, June 7th, from like 5 to 8, and they'll have artists who will be either inside a store or an organization or outside. There'll be painters, woodworkers,
makers, potters, musicians, jewelry makers, and much more. And what a great event to come down, experience not only the great organizations and businesses that we have down here on Main Street, but the addition of the art and the artists here as well.
KHOI does its famous Doodle Squad every art walk. This will be our fifth annual Doodle Squad, where we put a big piece of canvas on the wall and have everybody help us paint a community banner. And we have live music to accompany that. So that's always a big event here at KHOI. The Doodle Squad.
Yeah, oh my gosh, that sounds great. Also happening in conjunction with Art Walk on the same night, there'll be a special exhibit over at ISU Design on Main, and it's called A Bevy Studio Curiosities. And a bevy means a large group or collection. So they're going to have 5 to 8 artists from the community, and they're going to have the gallery transformed into a cabinet of curiosities compiled from gathered objects, tools, images, and works which inspire each individual artist. So be sure to check that out. That'll be from 5 to 8 p.m. during Art Walk on Main Street. So Ames on the Half Shell returns this week, and then they'll be ongoing through the month of June. Great organization that put on by the Ames JCs, and so good things that they do.
It's music.
Great music, right? Mm-hmm. And great band each week. So starts May 31st and goes through the month of June. This kicks off Friday, May 31st at 5 p.m. at the Banshell Park. And their first artist that will be performing their band is Wicked Liquor, spelled uniquely. So be sure to check that out. If you love ice cream, come on down to the Ames History Center on Saturday, June 8th. They're going to have their community ice cream social, and they'll have ice cream sundaes and kids activities. So a fun addition to spending time downtown on June 8th. Also, the Ames Historical Society has a lot of things going off. They'll have their summer at Hoggett School kickoff, and that's Sunday, June 9th at 2 p.m. More ice cream and music and a photo booth. And this is at Ames First School. So you can even learn to make butter in the Pioneer way. And they've got great activities going on at Hoggett all summer long, so be sure to check that out. The library has a lecture series that's ongoing, and June 11th, they will have one called Magical Material, the Glass Sculpture of Dale Chihuly, and this is presented by Allison Sheridan and Adrian Gennett, and they're going to have a lecture starting at 7 p.m. on June 11th, kind of walk through the art and from the artists and learn about the studio work and large-scale installations from Dale Chihuly. Also, Actors is having their performance of Curtains, and this goes on all through the month of June, the 13th, 14th, 15th. 21st, 22nd, 28th, 29th, and June 30th. They're calling this a killer season. Musical theater and murder merge in Curtains. Lieutenant Frank becomes infatuated with the theater while he investigates a diva's murder. So Actors always has a great performance, and that begins at 7:30 p.m. and they kick off on June 13th. In the newly renovated space downtown on Main Street, Cook's Emporium. If you haven't been in there, it's great. What a great new remodel and great addition to Main Street. They're having a homemade tamales workshop. This is Saturday, June 15th, starting at 10 a.m. And what a great way to learn and receive a tasting of what's being demonstrated. It will be a great opportunity. I've been to some of those, and I've always met someone new when I go to those. So a great way to meet some people from the community while you enjoy food. Mary Poppins Jr. is going on June 21st. That's put on by Story Theater Company, and that's put on and managed by the youth in this community. So great performances, June 21st and 28th. That's here at the Ames City Auditorium. Okay. So it's called Mary Poppins Jr., their musical, and the whole family's invited, but it's put on by the kids. So and they do all the jobs that are backstage as well as front of the house. So they really run it all. So it's a great experience.
Very nice.
Iowa Able Run is happening on June 22nd at 8 a.m. at Ada Hayden Park. And this is a fundraiser for the Iowa Able Foundation. They work to assist elderly and disabled with financial coaching so they can live more independently. So always a great run if you like to get outside. Just want to say that there's a lot of things going on at Story County Conservation, Ryman Gardens, Prairie Moon Winery, Iowa State Center at the Stevens Auditorium. So we invite you to always go to their websites, check it out. There's so much more that we can't mention on the air today. But there's all kinds of things you can do inside and outdoors here in Central Iowa, and particularly in Ames. So just keep looking, and it's too many choices.
Thank you, Crystal Davis from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Crystal, you always have a very good problem. You always have more than there's time for us, so we'll have to allocate a whole hour to just your presentation. Right. Thank you so much for coming by. You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I have been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD of The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, come on down. We'll train you. It is lots of fun and infinitely interesting. And please remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Stay dry. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Northminster Presbyterian Church, presenting their 2019 Vacation Bible School Marketplace 29 AD, an opportunity for experiential learning. Children from preschool to sixth grade are invited to visit and interact with a recreated marketplace from biblical times, June 16th to 20th. Information and registration forms are found at www.amesnpc.org. That's www.amesnpc.org.